The next item on our agenda is a very popular topic year after year, and this year particularly a very interesting topic. We're going to hear from David Crowe. David is president of D.C. Legislative and Regulatory Service. He has been our legislative representative in Washington for 25 years, at least. And he's back because y'all demand him back every year. His view of Washington and how it affects us and the country and your neighbors and everything else is critical, because we live in a public environment, and when the public doesn't garden when it's under stress, and we want them to garden. So, David, tell us what's going to happen.
So you guys know I love being here every year. We do it for free, and I would walk here. And I think everybody feels that way about Robert and JC for putting up with him, and all of you for putting up with me. So this is fun, and I tell you, this is Tom and others who've worked in Washington know you can't let your hair down very often. Say things that you would, if this was a D.C. audience, I wouldn't say half the things I'm saying, and I never would have, because you just can't, right? So let me start with, in a normal midterm election year, the party in power will do as well in the elections as the approval rating of their president. So this is like going in for a physical, and the doctor checks your pulse and your blood pressure. First two things. The pulse and blood pressure of a midterm are the president's popularity. Where Joe Biden is today, love him or hate him, is about 41%. If this was a typical year, the Republicans would take 40 House seats and about 5 to 7 Senate seats. That would be the average. But this year, this era, is anything but normal for lots of reasons. And I think that no one would disagree when I say the world has not been this turbulent since World War II. If you look at all the different things going on in the world, whether it's global drought, the Chinese problem, clearly the war in Ukraine, these are just very, very unstable times. The other thing is the 2 years of COVID. I'm looking at you guys, and 1 year, I think there were 12 people 2 years ago. Last year, about half this crowd. This is starting to feel normal. But coming out of COVID, you're also seeing a lot of strange things, right? And politically, that's affecting the electorate. So let's start with how a midterm can turn out different than you think it can. So I'm going to start with Obama, 2006. He was popular then. His approval rating was in the low 50s. But he rolled out Obamacare. And in Obamacare's rolling out, you couldn't make this up. It looked like a Saturday Night Live skit. The computers kept crashing and crashing and crashing. And the Secretary of Health and Human Services, God bless her, was in a senior center in Miami, Florida, and said, we've got everything straightened out. I'm going to enroll my first person. When she clicked the button, the entire system crashed and went flat. So for 2 years, Obamacare was the big thing, and then they couldn't move it. So what happened? A pretty popular president lost 54 House seats, 7 Senate seats. And a lot of the people that lost can tie it directly to how Obama's popularity dropped going into a midterm. It killed them. The Republicans were very motivated to vote. Democrats were discouraged, turned off, they stayed home. Midterm is always about which party is more motivated. In a general election, generally both parties are. You've got two people running for president, you're going to get a higher voter turnout. Midterms, you don't. So if one party shows up 3 or 4% more than the other, it can be a landslide. Look at a couple of others. In FDR in 1938, he came in strong, but by 38 there was a lot of fatigue, even though he won another couple of elections. But the New Deal had lost several cases before the Supreme Court. There were lots of unhappiness in the economy. He lost 81 House seats and 7 Senate seats. You can tie most of them simply to his popularity. Now let's look at even Ike, 1958. Ike was old. He'd had a heart attack. World War II was over. People were tired of the same old thing. He lost 41 seats, 13 Senate seats. And he was a very popular president overall, very popular. So let's look at the two good examples of when the party in power didn't lose seats. One would be John F. Kennedy, 1962. So there's a few of us old enough to remember the Cuban Missile Crisis. I was in fifth grade, I think, and we were in bomb shelters. We watched President Kennedy every night. He came on the news and discussed this crisis. The entire world thought that we were at the brink of nuclear war. There was tremendous fear. Even in my elementary school, kids would talk about nothing but that. Kids that knew nothing about Cuba or missiles or cared about Kennedy, that's all we talked about. My father would drag us into a church basement, hated churches, but they had the biggest basement in town. He buried cans of food in the yard. Even though he was crazier than most people, there was a tremendous fear, and people rallied around JFK. He won House and Senate seats in 62. A lot of Republicans that would have won didn't. A bunch of Democrats that would have lost, they didn't lose. The more recent example is George W. Bush at 9/11. So Bush, as we know, lost the popular vote, won in the Electoral College. Generally, that spells doom for the president. They're 4 of the 5 presidents who've had that happen to them lost re-elections. 9/11 comes along. People rally around George W. Bush. He's standing in the rubble at the World Trade Center with his arm on a guy who'd been rescuing people, wearing a hard hat, and said, "We will get the people who did this." And he got the entire country behind him. And he was able to hold that popularity through a re-elect. George W. Bush didn't lose any House seats, picked up 2 Senate seats. A lot of Democrats running that year might have won their House seat or Senate seat. They didn't stand a chance. So when things are normal and a president has a popularity of 41, his party's going to get clobbered. But what has happened? There's several things that are going on, and some have been going on for a long time. And I'm going to start with 2 quotes that I frequently use just because I think they do a really good job of summarizing the current era. And I mean not just 2022, but the last several election cycles. So the first quote is by a man the year after the Civil War. And it goes something like this: "Nothing renders society more restless than a revolution but half accomplished." The second quote is from Arthur Kessler, who was an avowed communist who went to Russia and studied it and decided, maybe it wasn't Shangri-La after all. His quote is, "No death is so sad and final as the death of an illusion." And what I would make the case for, and I think I know which camp we're in, about half of us think the other half is insane. You've got a electorate that's not just divided. They don't like each other, and they almost hate each other. The Pew Charitable Trust does a good job of monitoring certain things. It's a liberal think tank, but they do a few things that probably no one does better. And one of them is they ask Americans in a big random sample, how do you feel about people of the opposite political party from you? And in 1994, as recently as that, 17% of Republicans said, I very much dislike Democrats. And it was 15% of Democrats saying that about Republicans. And this is even, would you marry somebody of the opposite party? And about 15% said no. And flash forward to now, 62% of Republicans say they very, very much dislike Democrats. Don't like talking to them, don't like being neighbors with them, won't engage in a discussion with them. And 58% of the Democrats feel that way about the Republicans. So this changes politics. So somebody can run a bad race, John, I'm trying to throw you a bone, and still win if the party is so divided that they just hate the other side. I wouldn't vote for a Democrat if he was a yellow dog, you know, those kinds of things. So that changes the polling. The other thing, John, I'll throw you another bone. Donald Trump has always been underrated as a candidate because there are a lot of people in 16 that voted for him. But if you ask them if they're going to, oh, no, no, I can never vote for him. But the polls don't show that about 4 or 5% people voted for him that said they wouldn't. Now, I think that may have changed between now and then. And so let's look at the next set of things. And one is demographics. So my wife's family lives in a farm about 30 miles from Peoria and about 145 miles from Chicago. They're not close to any urban area. I mean, Peoria is a city, reasonably sized, but it's like 40 minutes away. In my wife's family group, they don't know a single person that voted for Joe Biden. Not one. And so what my brother-in-law will say is clearly the election was stolen. I can't even find a Democrat. You can drive hundreds of miles in various parts of our very large country and never see a single Joe Biden sign. When I've traveled, and COVID slowed it down some, but I've traveled a bunch, you all have too, you'll see this. You'll go outside of a city, and you'll see nothing but Trump, 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 Trump. No Biden signs at all. So let's take a quick look at this. Between 2010 and 2020, the latest census, half of the rural counties in America lost population. And they lost a significant amount of population. So while the population grew by 23 million, the rural counties shrunk considerably. So let's look at something else. 40% of all voters now live in a county that touches a coast. If you looked at America on a map, and you could kind of make it round, even though you can't with Florida and Texas, and you looked at red, blue, blue rings the red. So we know that in the 3,040 counties, that Donald Trump won an overwhelming number of them, 2,000 some odd. We also know that Joe Biden, and I believe this to be true, got 13 million more votes than Obama in 2008, 69 million versus 81 million, about 400,000. But get this, write this down. He did it with losing 400 more counties than Obama did. So to put this number, turn it around, Barack Obama won 873 counties. Joe Biden won 477. This is out of 3,040. So what you have and what's been going on, Obama had a kind of a broader popularity than Biden. There's no question. And he was a much more beloved figure in the party. There's no question. Joe Biden's not beloved by much of anybody. He's just kind of a guy, even if you think he's the greatest, he's the guy next door who kind of did okay. He's not a great orator, wasn't a war hero. He isn't the first African-American president. He cannot spellbind a room. Barack Obama could spellbind a room, every room he walked in. I think he, Reagan, Clinton was a good orator. Neither Bush was. But Biden, on a scale of 1 to 10, even if you love him, gets about a 5. And yet, he got more votes in urban areas than Obama. Trump got 7 million more votes in 20 than 16. So what this tells me is that Trump energized both parties. He energized his own, but he really energized the Democrats too. So you had in a lot of urban counties as many as 94% of the voters voting for Joe Biden. Obama didn't get those high of numbers just because those numbers are very, very hard to get. He is broadly popular for sure. He got 54% of the vote. He's one of the few presidents since Reagan that actually got a majority 50% both elections. So, but Biden really got the urban vote. And I think that's the anti-Trump vote. Trump, who got 7 million more, clearly got the anti-Democratic vote. So these things are starting to make a big difference in our society, because when you get this kind of polarization and it continues, it makes governing much, much worse. And when you look at the hatred and you look at not liking the other party, you and I all know, go to any city. Where I live now in Northern Virginia is a very, very liberal place. If I drive 30 minutes, 40 minutes south, it's a very, very conservative place. It changes. As soon as you can see open land and mountains and farms, nothing but Trump signs. You cross into Fairfax County, you won't see any. And this polarization, I think, has not only made partisanship worse, it convinces big chunks of the country that the other side must be faking their numbers. Because 73% of registered Republicans say they think Trump won. That's an enormous number. And what I find interesting is when Trump did win in 16, he got 3 million fewer votes. But what he did is he stretched those votes brilliantly across the right states in just the right numbers. So as we know, if a state picks one party over another, Trump over Biden, by one vote, even if 10 million votes were cast, you get all those electoral votes. You get all of them. So our electoral college is a great strength, but it also didn't exactly go with the will of the people. You know, it's hard to lose 3 million votes and still win an election. What Trump did, which is amazing to me, about 77,800 people in a country that's over 300 million, not 330 million, in four states made the difference. Wisconsin, Trump won by 0.1%. Ohio, Pennsylvania, he barely won. He got all those votes. There was no complaining about the machines or the election thrown or any of that. And to Hillary Clinton's credit, and I will never give her credit for anything, she conceded. Barack Obama called her and said, "You will concede you lost. You will not put the country through all kinds of recounts. You will not do anything. You will come, you will say, you'll call Donald Trump to say you won, and you'll go get over it." And when Trump didn't do that in 2020, he created a set of issues for Republicans they're still dealing with. And that's why I'm going into this history. So if you're a voter in a midterm, and you're thinking ahead to 2024, and you always vote, and there's a percentage of us that vote every time unless we're deathly ill, and there's a percentage of us that only vote if the mood strikes us. Trump got a bunch of people who'd never voted before. Because, wow, he's different. I like this guy. And that happens. But what's going on now is both parties are voting in higher numbers, and both parties are much more worried about what the other party's doing. So this is changing things. The other thing that's changed in this election is the Dobbs case, the repeal of Roe v. Wade. And I know that this is the most divisive issue, particularly among women, so the last thing I'm going to do is take a position on any of this. But what happened when the Supreme Court reversed Roe v. Wade and said even incest, rape, and health of the mother doesn't count? Women got energized like they've never been energized. They not only raised tremendous money for this election, they registered lots and lots of women. Look at Kansas. Kansas is one of the reddest states. Clearly going to vote Republican every time. 70% of the voters in Kansas voted against a referendum on that abortion position. So I have friends of mine call me and say, well, it isn't going to affect the election because this is really kind of up to the states. What have the states done? They've done the same thing, right? If a rape, incest, health of the mother, doesn't matter. After 15 weeks, it's murder. So you've got women energized on this in a way they've never been energized. Now, you can say, well, what difference? You're not going to vote for a member of Congress or the Senate. They're not going to change that. But you're going to be mad at the party who did this. And because in Trump's 4 years, he appointed three Supreme Court justices, including one, you know, the last 30 days before the end of the year, when Ruth Bader Ginsburg died late in the year. All three voted for this total ban. And Trump took credit for it, bragged about it. They're his people. This is in recent enough memory. This just happened. This will have an impact. I don't know what impact it'll have. The polls don't show a huge surge. But you've got to follow the money, and you've got to follow people who've registered for vote in the last 60, 90 days before an election. They probably are going to vote. Right? Where polling is always wrong is you don't know who will show up. And people, believe it or not, John's familiar with this because he's a lawyer, people lie. They even do it under oath. So a lot of people say, oh yeah, I'm going to vote. They wake up that day and they don't vote. Or they don't early vote. Or they don't mail it in, whatever. And so you don't know. You know women this time who are Democrats and who think this ban went too far. They're going to show up. And they're going to show up in higher numbers than they would have otherwise. Now, the other thing that Democrats have going for them is that Trump has made this election, this midterm, about him. And he's done it in more than one way. One of the things he's done, John, I'll pick on you again, is he's gone out and endorsed candidates that are going to lose. So I'm going to start with my home state of Arizona. We had a couple of fabulous candidates in the Republican Party. Mark Kelly, who's a Democrat, who barely won, is in a state where you've had on the border more than 2 million refugees try to get across, and not refugees, everything from drug dealers to you name it. The borders are the least secure they've been in more than four decades. Joe Biden is not particularly known for being tough on the border. Donald Trump was very tough. Mark Kelly should be down by 10. Maybe more than that. He's going to win that seat. Because what Trump did is we have a really popular Republican governor, would have won in a breeze. Trump came out because the governor and the attorney general and the secretary of state would not say the election was thrown. So Arizona counted their votes by hand three times. You have a Republican governor, you have a Republican attorney general, you have a Republican secretary of state, you have a Republican secretary of records, and they control everything. They counted them by hand three times, and Trump said, you're lying. He said the governor should be thrown out of office, and anybody who didn't think the election was thrown, vote against him. So the guy that got the endorsement is a guy named Blake Masters. And Blake Masters is out there. He called Donald Trump, let me see if I get this right, a transformative midwife to a post-constitutional future. Now, I didn't go to Harvard Law School. didn't go to your law school. I actually went at night and didn't finish. I have no idea what the hell that means. What he has said is, the first thing he would do is file a motion to reinstate Trump. That he would throw out the Electoral College results. He would not accept anybody to work with him or in the Arizona government who didn't agree with that. And he's got some other positions that have just put him out there. Mark Kelly's going to win that race. I would have told you 6 months ago it would be impossible for a Republican to lose that seat. Let's go to Georgia. I'm a football fan. Love Herschel Walker. Didn't go to Georgia, but man, could that guy play football. But when Trump went to endorse him over some very, very qualified Republicans in Georgia, guys would have won against Warnock easy. They told Trump, this guy put a gun to an ex-wife's head and said, I'm going to blow your effing brains out. She'll say that he did it, and her kid, who was there, who's now an adult, will say he did that. With four different children, four different women, and a few more out of wedlock, and a bunch of them who got physically assaulted. And now we find out that he's the most anti-abortion candidate that you can find, that he paid for a girlfriend's abortion in 2009. Instead of saying I had a checkered life, I was a football superstar, God knows all of us were in that ilk, but he's denied everything. So the woman has showed the bill. Cost $700. You've got these women saying, he beat me up. You've got his 23-year-old son, Christopher, who is an activist, Republican, conservative blogger with a 500,000 following. That's a big deal. I've sold 210,000 books in my book, and I'm like, wow, how did I do that? This guy's got 500,000 people following every tweet, and he's 23. He's come out and said his dad is a total hypocrite. His dad didn't spend any time with any of the kids. He didn't help support them. And it was his mother, in fact, who had the gun put to her head and said, I'll blow your brains out. So Warnock and Herschel Walker basically tied. Any of the other non-Trump guys would be up by 10. I don't think Walker will win because this is hit very late and very hard. Let's go to Pennsylvania, Dr. Oz, who's from New Jersey. And even those of you, and I don't, who watch any talk show, know that Oz has been on every side of every issue you can think of. I'm not sure if he's a Republican or a Democrat or a Libertarian or an alien. He's just all over the map. He won by 300 votes against a very, very powerful candidate. It was the Trump endorsement. Trump came in, spent money and stumped and pushed Oz over the top. He's running against a guy who looks like a thug, who had a stroke, who hasn't campaigned, who has the worst record on crime you can think of, like less early release murders because that's okay for your neighborhood. He's a terrible candidate. Terrible candidate. Betterman is up by 8. So it's not just that Trump has endorsed all these guys. Their single criteria is, you won the election and I'll reverse it for you 2 years into the Biden presidency. So unlike Joe, who actually was a nuclear submariner, I was only a Navy reservist. One thing I can tell you, no one ever won the next war fighting the last war. And that's what the Republicans are doing. You can't win with Trump, but you can't win without him. And he alone is causing this election to, one, I will predict, won't take the Senate back. We should have between in the House 40 to 60 seats. It'll probably be 10 or 15, which is tough. The reason the Republicans will take the House is they only need 5. The historical average is 40. This is a no-brainer prediction. But a lot of those seats are going to be much closer than you think, and there'll be Republicans that lose because of this. So this is what's going on. In my opinion, the only real good chance that Republicans have to pick up a seat, offset these losses, is Adam Laxalt in Nevada. His grandfather was the most famous name in Nevada. His grandfather was Ronald Reagan's best friend, governor, senator. Paul Laxalt was an icon. And in Nevada, he still is. Adam is a smart guy. He's a lawyer. I think he was a former AG. He's got a lot of good things going for him. And Trump did not mess this race up. He may have endorsed him. Adam Laxalt would have won anyway. So you're going to pick up that seat, but you're probably not going to pick up Georgia, which you should. You're not going to pick up Pennsylvania, which you should. You're not going to pick up Arizona, which you should. J.D. Vance will squeak by, but that race is closer than it should be, too. And in North Carolina, we've got a race that's never been more than 1 point apart for 18 months. So I have a couple of good friends that are members of Congress in North Carolina, and I've asked them over time. And I just saw one of them, David Rouser, about a week ago. And he said, this is 3 a.m. on election night. He said, Trump has stirred the state up. The abortion thing has the state stirred up. And Sherry Beasley has taken advantage of both things. So that's where we are with this. The other prediction I want to make is that if the Democrats had all of the things off the table, let's look at what they did. $1.9 trillion pandemic package, $1 trillion infrastructure package, a very big bill to boost semiconductors. They've had some legislative achievements. I said a year ago that Joe Manchin, would stop this whole big initiative. Somebody came up to me today and said, well, Manchin caved. This was supposed to be $6 trillion, then $3.5 trillion. He got it down to about $900 million. And a lot of the money is not as nearly as bad as it would have been in terms of throwing millions and trillions around that would just be wasted. So he's been tough. But if we have the Senate that I think we're going to have, you're going to have guys like Joe Manchin calling the shots again for the next 2 years. And all of the polls, and this is something I didn't want to say today, because you think, you're only 34 days out. You're going to see some clear vision. And usually you do. Usually there's a clear break. There isn't one this year. There has not been any clear breakaway for any candidate in any major race. They're stuck. And I think the pollsters know this. They don't know what to do. So all they do is tell you about all the old analytics, but you're not seeing the predictions you usually see. And even pollsters inside the party that I've talked to are saying, I don't see any pulling away. So in the last couple of weeks, I've been all over Capitol Hill, and I hadn't been in 2.5 years. Just Zoom, an occasional meeting. So this, in the last 2-3 weeks, month, I've talked to almost everybody I can think of, including a couple of Democratic senators who you just happened to catch walking. And I've even asked them, what do you see in the polls? And they'll get quiet. I expect them to say, oh, Democrats are going to win all these seats. They haven't said that. They haven't said that at all. They've even said they think, they're more conservative than I am, but they think a bunch of these Republican races I think are lost could still be won by the Republicans. When I talked to the Republicans, I was at a fundraiser for 3 hours the other night, 13 members of Congress, spread all over the country, all smart. None of them said they could see anything in the polling that made them feel comfortable. Nothing. And they were everywhere from California to Maine to Florida, you name it. And that's a weird thing, right? And it's an unsettling thing. Now, this happened, the Cuban Missile Crisis year. This happened right after 9/11. Eventually, the boat broke for the other side, but it didn't break until the very end. And the polls never picked it up. This year is a year that I don't think the polls are going to be right. I think they're going to, basically, the smartest pollster is just going to be low-key. I always read what Nate Silver does. He's the 538.com guy. And lots of people hire Nate. Whenever you see the odds in a football game or in all these things, that's Nate Silver. He's supposedly the best analytic guy in the world. He looks at all the different things. And what he has said is the polls are within 1 or 2 points in almost every Senate seat. Even Walker's seat, even after these revelations the last 48 hours, he didn't drop in the poll very much, maybe 1 point. And that's polarization, folks. I'm going to vote for Herschel Walker no matter what, because I hate Route 1. That's what you're seeing. So it's hard to predict these days. Now, the last thing is, how much further can this divide go? So if you're a Republican, you've got all kinds of red meat. Violent crime, off the chart, particularly in cities where they defunded the police. Border surge, off the chart, with a president who doesn't take it seriously. Immigration's horrible. Crime's horrible. Now let's get to the economy. Early in the year, inflation was really bad. Energy prices were bad. Then they got a little bit better. They're back to being really bad again. People are naming number one issue for them, and it often is the economy. So if gas prices continue to creep, inflation stays as high as August, September, Republicans should pick up 40 seats. The polling should already reflect that. It doesn't. The strength, it's not reflecting anything other than it's tight. So what I think this means for us on Capitol Hill is more good than bad. What I would hate, just being me, is an all-Democratic situation where they can throw taxes and regulations and all kinds of stuff at you. We know that if the Democrats have one more senator, just one, you would have had between $3.5 and $6 trillion climate package that would have done everything from ban fossil fuels to put billions of dollars into all kinds of technology and climate science that isn't even proven. They missed it by that much. They also would have raised taxes tremendously. They would have repealed the Trump tax break. They probably would have repealed all the way back to the Bush tax break. You would be paying way higher taxes. That's just a fact. Regulation, you would be much more regulated. Everything that you do. Joe Manchin, he may not be perfect, and he may have let something go through. He is a Democrat after all. But he was the little Dutch boy with his finger in that dam. What Democrats have said and what they will do is if they get a majority in both places, they're going to shoot that agenda as fast as they can. It would come out in the first days. And the big criticism against Biden in the party was he didn't do that. He didn't do that because he knew Joe Manchin was not going to do this for him. And he knew Kristen Sinema from my home state of Arizona. She's an interesting person. She's trying to become a Democratic John McCain. We like maverick weirdos that you can't predict in Arizona. As long as you got a military background, that's fine with us. Or you like the military. She has become that person. She wouldn't let any tax increases go. Every Democrat in the Senate came up to her and said, you've got to let tax increases go. No, I'm not going to do that. So Manchin said tax increases were fine with him because he knew he had Sinema. And between the two of them, they played the entire Democratic Party for 2 years. You've got to give them a hell of a lot of credit for that. They did 90%, maybe 80% of what you'd want. You take them away, and you're talking about a country that has free Medicare, free college, free everything. Child care tax credit for up to $250,000, even if you're not looking for a job. Child tax credit used to be, I'm working and I need tax credit because my kid needs to be watched. Or I'm not working so I don't need it because I'm home. Bernie Sanders wanted a $250,000 limit, unlimited. You have a kid, you get $30,000, $35,000 a year every year. Free college, free Medicare for all. And this really hurts the states that already paid a big chunk. West Virginia, for instance, one of the reasons Manchin was really against it is because West Virginia paid a really steep price in their state to keep their system going. And if you made it completely free for everybody, that entire investment is wasted. What else does Sanders want? He wants anybody who's been in this country more than 6 months to be a citizen. Just sign them up. They're here anyway. So not only is that between 20 and 40 million people, it means all those guys on the border, bring them in. They're going to vote Democratic, I promise you. This is a good thing. There's not going to be any argument about that. This is what the other side will do. So how the Democrats are running and trying to bump this poll number out, is this is a tight game now. So you're going to have to do something pretty extreme to turn this. So they trotted out this in the last couple weeks. So Biden gave a speech that says, if the Republican Party wins, America will go into a dark, dystopian apocalypse of hatred, bigotry, and taking women's rights back to the Stone Age. And they're starting to pump that up. So you're not running against your opponent. You're running against a Stone Age Neanderthal that hates women, hates immigrants, that hates any normal citizen who's being harassed by the police, who is not paying their fair share of taxes, and who deserves a living income for being alive. No human is illegal. And one thing I find hilarious is when Governor DeSantis sent those folks to Martha's Vineyard, because it's a sanctuary state, you saw signs everywhere, no trespassing, we will prosecute to the fullest extent of the law, and they were gone in 24 hours. So people really don't mean this. You know, you're a sanctuary state thinking, oh God, please. It's like inviting, you know, your pain in the neck brother-in-law over for Thanksgiving, knowing he won't come. Oh, so sorry you can't come. Oh, God. This time he showed up, and he brought busloads of people with him. You're like, oh my God, I don't want you here. I know I said I did, but I didn't mean it. And you've got this going on. I ran into former Governor Virginia Terry McAuliffe, and I've known him for almost as long as I've known Bob. It's a long story. I met him when we were both young lobbyists, and all he did was dial for Democrats. He'd run into me in the men's room. He'd say, can you make 10 calls for Bill Clinton? I go, nope. Next day, he'd ask me if I could make 10 calls for Hillary. He said, I can't do that either. But we stayed friends. He was at the post office a week ago Thursday. And I said, oh, my God, what the heck are you doing here? And he said, I've been all over the country stumping for Democrats. And I said, Jesus Christ, which Republican paid you to do that? You got your butt kicked big time only a year ago. I know him well enough to do that. He said, how did that help anybody? He said, no, you have no idea. I'm popular in a lot of places. Just not where you live. And I said, where have you been lately? Oh, I was at the Texas border stumping for Beto. And I said, how'd that go? He said, well, I thought it was going to go well. And then Governor Abbott started busloading all these people to New York City and Washington, D.C. Says the smartest politics I ever heard of. And I said, duh. What if they busloaded them to your little gated community here in McLean? How would you like that? Well, they wouldn't do that. I said, because we're not a sanctuary state, because you lost. Lynn Youngkin isn't going to let this be a sanctuary state. And he said, well, I think the Republicans are really being unfair in Texas. I said, that means, you know, Beto's going to lose, and Abbott's going to win, so you're going to win the Senate and the governor's seat, because he's unfair. But I said, what do you think the Democrats would have been able to do if Trump hadn't made himself the single issue? And he said, we thank God for that every single day. He changed a complete winning hand to a hand where we can win lots of places where we didn't think we could win. And I said, Terry, you have read my mind. That's exactly what I think. He has changed the landscape because he's made nothing but the 2020 election the only issue for Republicans. So what does this do? It takes Biden's 41% approval rating off the table. It takes violent crime in big cities off the table. It takes this huge immigration surge off the table. It takes inflation off the table. It takes higher energy prices that everybody feels off the table. What you've basically done to the Republican Party is neutralize it, because only issue is, did I win in 2020, and will you vote to undo the 2020 results? So you can check this out if you don't believe me. Go back and look at everybody who Trump's endorsed and ask what the criteria was. One thing. Do you believe I won the 2020 election? Yes. Will you fight to reinstate me? Yes. Will you go along with everything I say? Yes. I'll endorse you. 9 of the 10 Republicans who voted to impeach him the second time, not the first time, after January 6th, lost. 9 out of 10 lost their primary. Before that, before the impeachment, several came out and just said, I think he went way too far. They either retired or all got beat. So if you're a Republican, you're in a bad place right now. I think the future gets bright for us when he goes away, but you're in a bad place. If you don't 100% defend him, he'll endorse somebody against you, and you will lose. If you do that, you're going to turn off the swing voter, the Democratic voter, and the voter that says, enough already. I know a lot of people, and I would put myself in this camp. 2016, I thought, this guy's going to be great. He does what he says, and he's going to take action and all that. And then it went too far, and then too far again, and too far, and now he won't let it go. So why is this entire talk really about Trump? He's the elephant in the room. So I like doing this because I've talked too much. How many believe Donald Trump will be the Republican nominee in 2024? How many believe he would win? How in the world do you think that? I mean, she did win by 3 million votes. Don't forget that. He got 46.8. She did win the popular vote by 2,920,450. All right, now, I didn't go to your law school, but it's the guy who got the most votes win. Raise your hand. She won by 3 million votes. The pollsters were wrong because they thought she would win by 5 million votes. Three million votes is a pretty big margin. No, they weren't pollsters. Those are real numbers. Well, here's the thing. A 3 million vote win would be a pretty sizable win. John F. Kennedy won by 108,000. I hate Hillary Clinton. Let's be clear. Hillary Clinton is a horrible person, but she did not tie the entire Democratic future to her past.
Well, she couldn't. There are people who like her.
She still won by 3 million votes. So let's move on. How many people think that the Republicans can nominate somebody other than Trump? Raise your hand. Now, a more important question. How many people think the Republicans can nominate Trump and he won't try to kill that person off? Raise your hand. there, my friends, is the problem. He's already said he doesn't like DeSantis. He's fat. Can you imagine Donald Trump calling someone fat? It's hilarious. Probably says he dyes his hair, too. He called him a fat, whiny nobody. This is reason. That means he thinks DeSantis is going to challenge him. So, we have an interesting thing here with my very wise and loving and literate audience. We know that we've got a problem in 2024, don't we? Now, the only thing that could fix it, and I'm not advocating this, but a massive heart attack. You've got two Big Macs in your mouth and just boom. You hit the ground and Melania goes, oh, thank God. I don't have to wait for the prenup. But if he doesn't do that, and if he just remains damaged goods, right? He's had lawsuits, New York, he's got Mar-a-Lago, but he's going to survive, perhaps wounded. But if he goes into 2024 and he runs, he takes all the oxygen out of the room. Because the Republican base, unless they change dramatically, and I don't believe they will. I think the base that loves Trump can't really be changed. Even guys like us, it's like, just go away. I mean, you were fine, go away. Because now you're not helping, right? But the base, the average person, and we all talk to them, they want him back. And they will vote for him. And that means they'll vote against anybody else running in those primaries. But 73% of the Republican base thinks he won in 2020. They will all vote for Donald Trump. They will all vote for him. Because if you believe he won last time and got cheated, you're going to vote for him this time and make sure he doesn't get cheated. All right, let's move on to another issue where we pull this. Who thinks Joe Biden will be the nominee for the Democrats in 2024? What am I going to do with you, John? Jesus. Do we need a lawyer that bad? Of course I want to know why, John. I'd live for it. John, I love you, but I'm going to disagree. Does anybody remember Lyndon Johnson? What happened to Lyndon Johnson? You know why? He got his butt kicked in New Hampshire. He planned to lose in New Hampshire. He ran in the New Hampshire primary when it was the biggest deal in the world, and Eugene McCarthy took 40-odd%, and the next day he got religion. The best thing to do before you get fired is to resign and say, you know, I have accomplished everything I could here. I'm feeling this great need to go take my genius to a different place. And that's what he did. He was going to lose the primary in his own party. Now, let me tell you something else. Every president who has run for re-election, every, has been defeated in the general if they had a very significant primary challenge. I raise Jimmy Carter. Teddy Kennedy pounded his brains out. Carter got the nomination, but he was incredibly wounded. Okay? George H.W. Bush nearly got beat by a journalist living in the District of Columbia who never had kids. He'll get. Johnson did not get it. And Biden turns 80 very quickly. If he loses in a couple of primaries, he will say to the people, I've had a good life, I've served, and I'm stepping down. He's not exactly the world's bravest guy, and he is not exactly a martyr. That's not his deal. So he gets beaten in the primaries, is my prediction. Now, I'm going to ask you that next. Now, who believes, and I want to see the hands on this one, and if I see yours, I'm going to throw something at you. Who thinks Kamala Harris is the heir apparent to Joe Biden? Raise your hand. Thank God none of you did that, because you would buy me three drinks tonight instead of two. Joe Biden has put himself in one hell of a box. He picked an unelectable VP. So a lot of my buddies, I hate to admit this, I represent the Small Business Council of America, and they're all liberal. And I hate going to their annual meeting. I leave the day I get there. I do the talk, and I go. And I can't say any of the things I get to say to you. One of our gazillionaire members lives a half mile from Harris and her husband. And he is so liberal that when he and I talk, my head hurts. And I bite my tongue, and I think, God, do I need this retainer that bad? He said, I hate Kamala Harris. I said, oh, don't throw me a bone. He said, she's not liked. Another guy got on who's even more liberal and filthy rich. He's one of those guys that writes like a $25 million check to the party every year. And he's been invited on Air Force One by every Democratic president. He's huge, and when he does fundraisers, he raises millions. And he writes checks for millions. So he got on the phone. Now he's so rich, he bought Dr. Seuss's house in La Jolla and restored it. That's a big deal. That's the most expensive house in probably the most expensive county in the country. He's that rich. So he put three of his lawyers to do advance for Harris on one of her first trips. This is, I forget what her first. She went to Poland and started laughing when she didn't understand what the gas prices in the U.S. meant, and the Polish guy had to answer for it. Go back and watch that on YouTube. She's over in Poland. This is early in the war. And she's trying to social support for America. And one of the journalists says, are you concerned as vice president that the cost of energy has gone up astronomically, that gas prices have risen above five, I think someplace to six at that time? And she laughed and pointed at the reporter, like she always does. And people look around like, you're in Poland, the Russians are in Ukraine, the U.S. economy's in the tank, gas prices have doubled and may go higher. So he thought it was, she didn't hear, like she had my hearing. He said, are you concerned? And she kind of did the deer in the headlight thing. Yeah. The Polish prime minister answered for her. Look this up on YouTube. She is so ridiculous. So I asked this guy, what did your staff of lawyers say? Big honor to advance a vice president. You've advanced presidents. You did advance for Bill Clinton. You did advance for all the way back to Muskie. He said, they hate her guts, and they told me they're never going with her ever again. So I said, when we read Politico and Hill, you don't know if it's completely true or not, because you don't know the people that well. Mostly it's true, but sometimes it's not, right? In Politico and Hill, they said that her staff turnover as VP has been more than 100%. So one of the ways I judge senators, forget whether they're liberal or conservative, is how good their staff is. To give you an example, Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota, pretty liberal, but she's on committees I have to work with. Her staff is the smartest staff I've ever met in my life. They're unbelievable. It's like stepping into a law firm that bills 1,000 hours a month. I mean, they're incredible. So I judge her by that. If I want to know something, I'm going to go there. Now, there's several Republicans that are very good, too. But she's an example of somebody politically I wouldn't necessarily spend any time with, but I do. When we had a couple of issues with Harris's office, my DCLRS, one time I couldn't figure out who handled the issue because I got several different answers. And I went in one day and I said, can I talk to the chief of staff? Well, we had two since you were last here. So her turnover rate is astronomical. Biden has tried to calm it down by putting his people in. They've all quit now. She couldn't organize a Kool-Aid stand. So this leads to the next thing. If Biden gets beat in the primaries, generally you fear the VP. You fear that person. Because if you run against the VP after the president steps down, I mean, that's how Hubert Humphrey won against him. If you don't fear the VP, and you know that the president can get beat in the primary, and believe me, Democrats who are ambitious, want to run for president, they know this. They're not afraid of Harris, and they know Joe Biden will stumble his way through, and you can beat him. I believe this changes the landscape big time. So, who thinks it will be Gavin Newsom of California? Raise your hand. Wow, just one? Two. Who thinks it will be Pritzker of Illinois? Wow. Who thinks it would be Elizabeth Warren? Bernie? John Hazard? Okay, so you guys, so what you're really saying, and I understand this, is who's the heir apparent? Who's in third place that isn't a retread? It's pretty wide open. Now, I think it'll be Gavin Newsom for one reason. Nation's most populous state. He survived a recall. And two recalls, I guess. Yeah, and that gives him something. Now, I think he's a dud, but I'm going to think just about any Democrat is. And play my cards out here. I'm not going to think that, you know, he's no Barack Obama. First time I heard Obama speak, I said, oh, this guy can beat you. This guy can beat you bad. And at first I thought, that was just a first impression. Because I saw him do this. He spoke for John Kerry at the Democratic Convention when nobody knew him. The most electrifying speech I've heard in decades. As my friends call him, and forgive this, he's the black Jesus. He's that good. Who's that person in the Democratic Party? It's somebody we don't know. I mean, Bill Clinton came out of the woodwork. Obama came out of the woodwork. No one. How about Hillary? You're trying to make my day, aren't you? You're trying to reverse what John Hazard has done to me. I love you, by the way. If I wasn't married, I proposed. That is brilliant. Hillary is the Donald Trump of the Democratic Party. When Republicans pray to Jesus every night, please bring Hillary Clinton back and make her the nominee, and I will love you forever, Lord. No. Even they're not that dumb. We're dumb enough to keep up with Trump. They're not dumb enough to keep. She would land like a lead balloon. No. Al Gore, when he lost, and he did win by 550,000 votes, he disappeared. Smartest thing he could have done. He's now a billionaire, sucking off all the venture capitals. And almost nobody has a second act. Now, back in the day, Adlai Stevenson ran twice against Ike. That was fine. He wasn't going to win either time, but he was popular. If you go back to our early American history, which you cannot compare to now because there's just too many changes, right? Richard Nixon is the last person that I can think of that had a second act. First of all, when he lost, he was only 43 years old. He lost an incredibly close election, incredibly close. Eisenhower, even though beloved figure, had as much to do with beating him as John F. Kennedy, because he represented the old school, and Ike was a big believer in stand up for yourself. He didn't really take Nixon resources. And Nixon made a big mistake. He made a really big mistake, and it was the first mistake of its kind. So it was the very first televised debates. So Nixon had hurt himself, and he made a promise to campaign in all 50 states. So he looked incredibly haggard. When he got to the debate that day, he was, fever's like 103, and he looked terrible. And he didn't shave since 5 a.m. This guy was born with a beard. He was not a good-looking man. Even if he had shaved, he would have still been Richard Nixon. So he shows up. John F. Kennedy got there 2 days early, tanning lamps, lots of babes, a little bit of champagne, a couple of massages. He steps out, and he looks like a movie star. I'm 10, and I'm watching this going, oh, my God. I'm glad he doesn't go to school with me. Every girl would want to date him. Richard Nixon looks like a used car salesman. He's doing this, and he's... One of my college things is I analyze the people who heard the debate and people who watched it. If you heard it, Nixon won, easy. If you watched it, the second you saw Kennedy, I like that guy. He's relaxed. He's calm. Had he not done the debates, he might well have won. But the point being, he was out 8 years, which only made him 50, 51. Hillary is somewhere between 70 and 1,000. There was a really funny thing I read about 2 weeks ago. She stopped wearing dresses because she didn't want to show too much leg. And I'm like, are you kidding me? That's why I stopped wearing dresses, too. All right, Bob, you probably want me. So, prediction. Did the Democrats win the presidency in 2024? Do Republicans win the presidency in 2024? I knew you would be that heavy. Tom, I'm going to pick on you. Who's the nominee? DeSantis. So that's what I think. I think if DeSantis doesn't get killed off by Trump, he can win this. I will also say, raise your hand, I've done this before, will Donald Trump try to kill off DeSantis? That would be a little bit like giving me the keys to your liquor store and strip show place in high school. By the time I get through with you, you'll be broke. He couldn't be VP to any human. He would never. No, you've got two big egos there. Ron DeSantis doesn't think he needs to be second to Donald Trump at all. One thing about being running for president, your ego has to be beyond belief. And Biden is a quiet version of beyond belief. This guy has run for president for more than four decades. Here's a really interesting Biden statistic. I got out of college in 1975. Should have been earlier, but I was studying other things too hard and didn't get through in 4 years. One of my first lobbying things, I was in the Senate, and Biden was in the Senate cafeteria. I walked by, wow, that's the new senator. He's like 31 then. He got elected at 29. He had the tragedy of his wife and one of his kids killed. Waited to take office. I heard him say, "I'm gonna run for the nomination in '76." I'm like, "Jesus Christ, you just got here." I went back and looked at all the pictures. He actually ran four times. No one knows it because he didn't do well. He actually spent over $12 million, money raised, and never got a single delegate until 2020. This even gets more weird. You had COVID, so no one really campaigned, right? He stayed in his basement, which saved him, because his energy level would have never allowed a world campaign. And that's another reason why in 2024 he will look like a mom. He just doesn't have the juice anymore. Love Trump or hate him, he's still got the juice. He doesn't look 78 now. He doesn't. He's energetic. Biden, if you've seen him at the end of a long day, he mumbles. And he walks like this. I mean, everybody notices. So Biden ran three primaries for South Carolina. He got killed in Iowa. He got crushed in New Hampshire. He came in a distant second in Nevada. He was within days having to drop out. He gets to South Carolina. And a man named Jim Clyburn, who is the head of the Black Caucus, one of the smartest members, period. This guy's brilliant. He is the whip for the Democratic Party. He's the majority whip. And he's a legend. Complete legend. What Jim Clyburn did was he wrote a letter to the people of South Carolina who revere him and said, you will pick Joe Biden. He's the best for the African American community. He's the best for the country. You have to pick him. The real message was, you're about to nominate Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, and Donald Trump will beat either one of them, and he would have. He would have beat anybody but Biden. Had Jim Clyburn not thrown everything to Biden, he would not be the nominee, he would not be the president. Over the next 24 days, he clinched the nomination, having gone 40 years without winning a single delegate and having been crushed every primary until South Carolina. Jim Clyburn picked the president of the United States. And as a Democrat who's smart, he made the absolute best choice he could make. And it worked out for him. Biden's a terrible campaigner. he's just not a very vigorous guy. And he's slowed down to the point where he's not the same guy he was as VP. And he's really lost. When you see him up close, he looks thin and frail. So I don't think he's the guy. Now, he says he is, and he says he'll run again. And he might. No one can predict it. But I say he gets beat in the primary. I say Ron DeSantis is the nominee. And I'm saying now, and hopefully you'll save questions and let me come back next year, you're going to see a presidential race between Gavin Newsom and Ron DeSantis. It's going to be the most expensive race ever run. They're both heavyweights in their own world. DeSantis basically came on the scene very, very late. He went to Yale on a full scholarship and was captain of their baseball team. Goes back to Florida. Yale undergrad, Harvard Law, honors all the way. Smart, smart guy. He's decided to run for the Senate in Florida. Realizes that ain't going to work for him because you got a popular Republican senator. He shifts gears, runs for governor, and beats 9 people and comes out of that pack. They say that he was going to lose to Chris, the former governor. He's up by 11. Ron DeSantis is a smart guy. But don't underrate Gavin Newsom. Just because you don't like him, be a tough race. But what I think we're both saying is it won't be Trump and it won't be Biden. And it definitely won't be Kamala Harris. And that is my cheerful message. I love you guys. And thank you.